The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the queue. My name, of course, is Mark Bland. And on this episode, we're going to talk about Ted Nugent and his recent statements about President Barack Obama. Two TV legends have passed away, and we will discuss them. And we are joined by a member of the legendary St. Louis hip-hop group, the St. Lunatics, a personal friend of mine. I've known this guy for a long, long, long time. Kiwan is here to break it all down with us. Welcome to the show, Kiwan.
What's going on, sir?
Appreciate you coming on the show, man. How have you been?
I'm maintaining with structure, my friend.
Maintaining with the structure.
That's right.
All right.
Everybody needs structure.
Everybody does need structure.
You make this show.
This show, well, this show might potentially need structure. Now, I noticed that in the background there, you were popping the top of a frosty beverage. What kind of frosty beverage are you popping the top of?
Well, this is the finest Moscato in the world. It's called Freaky Moscato. We're distributed out of Crown Valley Winery, and we're distributed by Lord Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
As far as St. Louis go.
All right.
We've entered 4 or 5 states. And still working to get bigger and bigger and bigger, man. But this is the finest wine, man. It's Freaky Moscato. You can go on drinkfreaky.com.
Okay.
Check it out. You see all the information on it and everything, where you can get it. We will if you're lazy, we will deliver it to your house.
Really? You'll deliver? You've got it down like that?
We got it down like that. If you order more than 4 bottles, I'll deliver. We'll deliver free.
You will bring it to their house. And will this be like when people win like a Super Bowl situation where they get the chance to, is this for me? Frosty? Okay, here.
You know, you gotta get your mind right, man, before you get your.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, that's very tasty.
Yeah, it's
not much of a wine guy myself, but have you always been big into wines?
Yes, I have. For the last 10 years, I've been wine only, actually.
Wine only?
Yeah.
No beer, no nothing like that?
A beer.
Hard liquors?
A beer if I go to the Cardinals game.
Okay.
Or the Blues game or something like that, or the Rams game. Hard liquor, if I do it, all my friends look at me like, oh my goodness, what's going on today?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, no.
Like it's a little different day.
I got you. Fair enough. So, talk to me a little bit. Now, I've known you since the earlier days of you being in the music and entertainment industry. I think the first time I met you was in a passing way at Saints Roller Rink quite a few years ago.
Right.
I think I happened to be hanging out with Willie Woods that night. Mm. You know, just trying to, you know, be a young kid trying to still make it in the music industry. And you guys were obviously, you started off recording out of the skating rink.
Yes.
You know, where a lot of people, that's a piece of the story that a lot of people on the local side of St. Louis, they hear about and they know about.
Right.
But I don't think the national scene really knows about that. You guys started off recording in a roller skating rink.
Right.
Like that was your main studio.
That was weird. Yeah, we started off at Saints Roller Rink. A lot of times we don't speak on it because of the way those people acted. So we don't like to give everybody credit.
Right, of course.
We don't do it, but it's all good. It's all peace, man. It's all wit. But yeah, we started the skating rink. That's where we hung out at every day. They saw everyday activity, and they started doing this thing where they was recording people on Saturday nights for $5. You can get your own CD made while you were skating, you know, all this crazy
right.
stuff. We went in there, we turned it out, and they just like, you guys can record in here, or, you know, and we just started recording and started writing up contracts, and we pushed a couple of our first singles, Give Me What You Got, and it went real big. Give Me What You Got was a big song in St. Louis, and it came out of that studio.
Now, there are songs, as you said, like Give Me What You Got, that happened before the mainstream success
right.
of Nelly himself, as well as this Free City CD with you
right.
guys.
Right.
And a lot of, you know, people don't realize there was an entire set of songs that was the Lunatics before Nelly ever had his
right.
own CD.
Yeah.
What's your favorite old song? Was it Give Me What You Got, or is there another one that kind of stuck out? Like, because you can see, if you know the story, there's certain songs that influenced future songs that eventually
right.
did pop onto CDs.
Right.
You know,
right? And with us, man, being 5 individuals, you never know where the song's coming from,
right?
Because it's however that one person was feeling, he starts it off and everybody finishes it. So we had a lot of songs like Rats, Gats, and Chronic Sax back in the day. I don't think a lot of people haven't heard that. Was just and that subjects are still today relevant. You know
oh yeah, very much so.
You know, Girls, Guns, and and weed. You know what I'm saying? So Rats Got the Kind of Sex. But that song, Give Me What You Got, took us to a level where we were performing and we were actually getting paid to perform.
Like, which was a nice step.
Which was a nice step. It won us some talent shows. You know, we was able to smile when we go out. People like, hey, you guys the ones that sing this song and such and such.
It didn't feel like so much a struggle anymore.
Yeah, it felt like it was. It is a light. Because before then, you know, you're going to say you're going to quit about four or five times.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just, you know, with us being all family, it's like one pushes the other. You know, if you feel like that, you speak it out, and the person tell you why you shouldn't feel like that. You know,
all right.
And bring all the good things out of what you're doing instead of just looking on the three bad things that's not happening for you.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, a lot of older music was more, I can say, funner.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
At that time period, you know, back at the time period where you guys are coming up in the game. Your big dogs on the scene were Master P and No Limit in that. I mean, those guys were really huge. Soulja Slim, Fiend, all that. Mm-hmm. Did they influence you guys, or were you influenced by other entities? Because I'm just basically gunning for the top players in the game at the time. You know, right. By that time, the whole West Coast thing had fallen off a little bit. Aftermath was kind of just chilling off to the side.
It was more Puff Daddy, Mace. You know, like you said, No Limit, Cash Money. A lot of No Limit. A lot of the music helps. With us being in the Midwest, we're able to embrace music from all over.
Right.
Real easily. So we pick up things from, you know, different music. Like, we might pick up their style of how amped they are, or pick up this style of how much colors they're wearing. Or
right.
Pick out, like, we don't have to frown. We can smile. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, so a lot of little elements we picked up. We love the West Coast.
I think St. Louis is primarily, and this is just my personal opinion from years of working in radio, I think St. Louis has an extremely large influence of the West Coast in it. You know, I think that there's more, we get down more with the Regulators, you know what I'm saying? We got down more with the MAC-10s and all that. Then we really got influenced heavily
by the Wu-Tang.
By the Wu-Tang, or Jay-Z, or those guys, Junior Mafia and all that, you know?
I feel. I just was one of those people that liked them both.
Oh, was looking for it.
Yeah, but I definitely understand what you're saying.
Would you say we're a Tupac town, or would you say that we're a Biggie town?
We're a Tupac town.
Yeah, we are Tupac. That's
we're a Tupac town, but I like Biggie, you know?
Of course.
I like 2x2, but I like the way Biggie articulates his words and make you think about it more.
Now, did you see the hologram that everybody's been talking about?
Yeah, I saw it.
And what did you think of that? Like, I mean, it was very lifelike. He's walking across stage, walking back and forth. When he turns, it's 3D. You know what I'm saying? It looks super realistic. Mm-hmm. And he's having a conversation with the other artists that are on stage. Like, obviously, the minute that it went over so well at Coachella recently, that was going to be the turn. And obviously, the next person everyone's talking about now is Michael Jackson. Do you think people will go to see a Michael Jackson hologram show?
I think they would.
You think they would?
Yeah.
Do you think they get the same feel? If they did it right, probably.
Well, we got the same feel when you see a movie of a person.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, people don't realize that.
He's not there.
Yeah, he's not there, and you're seeing him on screen.
And as long as he do the kick right, and you know, and do the scream, and wear the same
clothes. I mean, obviously, they can replicate certain aspects of the individual based off of video and things that they've seen. But do you think it loses that emotional connect? Because being a person who performs on stage, you see the emotional connect at certain times when you're doing your verses.
Yeah.
Do you think that it'll be lost in a stagnant way with the way that they create the show or the look?
I think if it was a normal person, it would. But I think with it being them people, we're fascinated anyway. And music is stagnating anyway by us sending music to people. We're not in the studio with each other a lot. We're just saying,
so you feel they can perfect it?
Yeah, I think you can perfect it. Same way we perfected Madden and NBA Live and 2K8. And
a lot of people disagree. They don't think Madden's perfect. I mean, they get angry. I mean, it's really because they lose.
Right.
They just get their butt kicked in Madden.
It's not about being perfect because, you know, Tupac show may not have been perfect. Well, you know, what is perfect in hip-hop? But it's giving you the feel and the actions of that they did before. So when I'm playing the basketball game, it's Kobe doing his move. It's not actually Kobe, but it is actually Kobe.
Right. So makes a good point.
You know, I think it's new to people's eyes, but in your mind, it already happened before.
Oh.
So it's sort of like a sample or something.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we'll get back into talking a little bit more about that stuff. Let's get on to one of these topics right here. Dick Clark. was an icon of television, not just teen dance shows. Venerable Jack of all trades, Dick Clark, passed away this past week of a massive heart attack. His spokesman confirmed he was 82 years old. Clark had undergone an outpatient procedure last night and was at L.A. St. John's Hospital at the time of his heart attack. Famed host of such shows as American Bandstand and The Pyramid, the veteran TV producer and personality was forced to retire from hosting his longtime running New Year's Rocking Eve special in 2005 after he suffered a serious stroke. Clark leaves behind his third wife, Carrie Wigton, and three children from previous marriages. Now, that's a huge hit. Let's talk a little bit about Dick Clark. Growing up, I'm sure you saw American Bandstand. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're close in age. How old are you?
I'm 35.
You're 35. I'm 36 years old. So we're relatively running along the exact same thing. We remember the day Thriller came out, how cool it was.
Right.
You know, all the same things. Swatch watches, hypercolor shirts. You remember it.
Right.
You were rocking them. You had some British Knights. Everybody had British Knights.
Definitely had British Knights.
Everybody had British Knights. I used to play basketball with a personal friend of yours. We grew up together, a gentleman by the name of Yomi.
Mm-hmm.
We went to high school together.
Right.
And my junior year, during trials for basketball, I wore these British Knights out for everything they were worth, man. I was horrible at basketball, but I was going to run faster than everybody, boy. I was going to hit those walls as fast as hell, man.
On PK, you're going to be the coolest ever.
Yeah, I was going to be cool as hell. And, dude, they were big, too. It almost reminded me of those skater shoes that the kids wear around now, where they leave them loose, but there's like huge on their feet, and you're like, really?
Right.
Really? How do you even skate with those things on?
We're going to do what they do, man.
But Dick Clark, you know, when we were growing up, The Pyramid. The theme song from The Pyramid, as well as him standing there with the two people sitting, the big pyramid. Did you ever get a chance to meet Dick Clark? On any of your tours or running around the United States?
Did I get a chance to meet him?
Yes.
Yes, we actually did. We met him in a bar. We did, I want to say around the holiday season, but it was back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
We met him before. Yeah, we did. He hired us a couple times for a couple of shows.
Really?
Yeah. He puts on a lot of events that people don't even know about.
Oh yeah. You
know, he's one of the biggest producers in my eye, because I like production. Period. So I just saw how he took him, his relationship with his stardom with American Bandstand, and then thought that we would like to see real famous people.
Right.
Answer these stupid questions and play the pyramid game. Like, that was big. Like,
oh yeah,
the way he played with our mind like that.
I mean, dude, it was the precursor. Like, the pyramid game having celebrities on it wasn't the first time. I mean, they've been doing shows with celebrities on it, but there had been a dead period. They hadn't done a lot of, you know, the wedding game or whatever it is with that. The only show that was doing it at the same time was about Hollywood Squares.
Right.
But that was always designed to have celebrities on it in the first place. Right. So yeah, it was kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Or bringing it back around,
You
know, bringing it back around for the first time in a long time. So, when you hear about Dick Clark or Don Cornelius, who recently passed away, which in the last few months, where do they line up as a person who has been successful in the music and entertainment industry? You know how hard it is to get to the top. You see these gentlemen, and obviously they've been legendary in their own rights. Where does that sit with a gentleman like yourself? You know, for the most people, we all, you know, and I'm not trying to put you out there on a pedestal as opposed to anyone else. I'm just saying you've been down roads that other people haven't been down.
Right.
And so if you've never been down those roads, you really don't have the theories, the ideas, the seeing. You know, people always ask the question every year, why do they keep bringing Dick Clark out with his stroke and his sounds bad when he's on there on New Year's Eve? But obviously it's the performer in him, you know, it's part of his life.
I mean, you're not going to tell him, no.
Well, yeah, you ain't gonna tell Dick Clark about nothing.
He wants to do it. He wants to be there. He wants to. You came up with him, seeing his struggles and seeing what it take to be who he was. So when he's on his bad side, don't run from it now.
Right.
Still him. He's a human. That's like saying your parents, something wrong with your parents or your cousin, and now you don't go talk to him no more because he had a stroke. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, of course. Yeah.
So with him being that legendary, then it works out fine to me. I respect it. So respect is everything, because people never see what it takes to be who they are.
Oh, no. They never see the struggles.
At least 25,000 people told them no a lot of times. To be able to have our mind that many times, like you had to reinvent yourself 10 times to have a show running for 10 years. Like,
yeah.
You have to. Like, it's no other way.
Right, because there's only so much longevity you have with a specific thing.
So for them to do it that long, then we have to respect it, and it's time to be quiet. It's just, you
all
know
right.
what I'm saying?
Now, you bring up an interesting point. St. Lunatics have been around since what year? The St. Lunatics.
The whole group. The whole group. Right, 05. '95.
Okay, so now you're 17 years in, mm-hmm. as of 2012. 17 years, that's a long career. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys have had a lot of success. But at a certain point, obviously, just like every artist, that doesn't mean that you've fallen off, mm-hmm. but music slowly decays and it goes, you know, even Sam Cooke, all the greats, mm-hmm. you know, slowly declines and they're not at the top of their peak anymore.
Right.
Okay. You guys, 17 years in, rap technically tends to have a shorter time span than a lot of other genres of music. It's not like country, you know.
And that's the difference, but I don't mean to cut you off.
Sure,
but,
sure, no, go ahead.
But that's the difference in an artist and a rapper, too.
True.
You know, and you can't tell Snoop that.
Right, no. And I don't mean to quote you guys as rappers.
I'm just telling the people why it matters to make a different type of music also.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and with Nelly doing Just the Dreams and doing country songs and doing those things.
Right.
A lot of times...
there's method to the madness.
Yeah, and sometimes we use the word fall off instead of fall over. You know, and it's like you're falling over into another category. So it becomes a different type of money where it's not seen as much. If Foot Locker was to go viral only, you can only buy shoes on the internet, it's a better business move for them.
Because
they don't have to have the physical copies. But to us, it's like, man, Foot Locker fell off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. You know, you're not in the public eye like that. Yeah. But like you said with Dick Clark, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes.
Right.
You're not seeing.
Right. And there's things you have to look at. Like you can look at I don't want to put, you know, somebody on blast because you never know what tomorrow is, but
okay.
Somebody like a Bone Thugs and Harmony, like you don't expect them to come out with a song no more, you know, and that can be effective.
True.
You know, you might expect them to go see them at a show, but you wouldn't see it as being effective. Now, we have to look at who is who, and like I watched Lil Wayne, who did the same amount of years we did, and then recreated his whole self. Now he has another 15 years in it, and he became a boss right then in front of our face.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When everybody from Cash Money left, it was like, oh man, they're done. Then just your work ethic and your timing and your studying the game makes you go again. Like you can always restore it. And that's what I see now with us. Like we're really sitting back rebuilding the part that don't nobody know that you need to rebuild.
Right. Now, you know? The question is this a Nelly thing? Is this a lunatics thing? Is this
is a lunatic thing.
That's obviously, yeah,
I mean,
okay.
I mean, that's what's hard to explain too. It's like, you got to do business. I mean, this is a business. I mean, if you want to rap for fun, you can do it in the shower.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
if you want to sing for free, you can sing on the corner.
Singing free, yep. I'm going to do that. If I'm doing a lunatic album and I make $10,000 a show, I mean, I might make, you know, we go, if you put the lunatics itself without Nelly, you may get us for $15,000 to $20,000. If you book us with Nelly, you get $120,000. If I get booked with Nelly for $120,000, I'm getting 20 of it. So I'm getting more for doing one line.
Right.
I'm doing a whole show. So it's like it's business. So I put that to the side to be this. You know,
of course. There's nothing wrong with that. It's called business ethics and doing good business.
Right. And then you got to find out who you are.
You got kids, right? Yeah. You got to keep a roof over their head.
And that's what it's about. You know, it's about business, man. You know what I'm saying? And everybody putting input on a project. You know, it's still me. Whatever he doing, it still reflects me. So
fair
if he's doing something wrong, I'm going to tell him. If he's doing something right, I'm going to tell him. I'm going to help him, and I'm, you know...
Now, I think my main question I was trying to get at, which I didn't get a chance to get at, was now that you're 17 years in, have you guys had that conversation? This is where we were. This is where we're at now, you know, and looking at that fall over. As you said, you know, have you guys had that conversation of it's time for us to look into a reinventing ourselves or anything like that?
We know it. We already... See, one thing about us, we didn't pop up in... We studied the game before we got in it. So we already were studying while we was doing it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we see a change and we're doing different moves. Now we have to find out how to make the customer understand what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Because you can do everything you want to or think the way you want to think. But how can you relate it to your customer that's buying you all the time or that wants something or don't want something and you're trying to feed them? And it's a hard thing, but it's also easy when you're sitting back watching for a minute. You got to sit back and see what you're doing, what you need to do, what they like from you, what they don't like from you. You know, we got Lunatic album coming up. We got Murph. We bringing up new artists that nobody never see because we're building them. Artists don't get built anymore. They don't have.
Well, let's give them a little play right now. Let's give them a little love right now. You know, who's some of the young artists that Dirty ENT as well as the Lunatics are working with?
We have a Lil St. Louis, buzzing real hard right now. He's a street anthem person.
Okay.
A different genre than what we're used to doing. We have young Hitman Holla. He's the best in the battle rap scene right now.
Okay.
We have Sag Live. We have Murphy Lee. We have City Spud. We have.
Oh no, that's funny. You mentioned City Spud. Mm-hmm. City being a part of the original group, mm-hmm. you know. And then he had some issues. We're not gonna have to. We don't have to get into those. Right. But you know, when he comes out, mm-hmm. you know, and being a friend of yours, obviously being a part of the family, he comes out. Now, this is all past, primarily. I mean, the remnants of it is still there. You're still getting booked on shows. He gets to see it and be a part of this part of it now. Is there any of a kindred feel for you guys as the Lunatics to go, man, I really want to give City the opportunity that he didn't get to, like, the things that he didn't get to see, you know, when he wasn't able to be there for
And that's what we're doing. Like, City doesn't miss a date. Like, a lot of times, you know.
City's on the bus before everybody.
Man, you hear me? So we used to be at a point where, you know, we were young and we were, like, even before we got signed, we used to all be at one house. We give $3 a piece on the, you know, so we can get two pieces.
Right.
You know, we chip in, we do what we can do to survive, and we all chip in on studio time and we do this and do that. Now when you get your money and your family, it's less time of that, but you're on the road together. So what happens is, right now, if you're going to Las Vegas for a party,
right,
Nelly, and I got something for Freaky, I'm not going to the Vegas party. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
But City going.
City going because yeah, City because wants to experience these things.
City wants to experience things.
So it's like, it's a dual thing. He's doing it because it benefits in the long run.
We're living for him right
now. And yeah.
We're actually living for, like, City was our rejuvenation of saying, this is a job to me now, but to you, it could be fun.
So is the prime, okay, so then my question for you, is the primary focus at this point for the St. Lunatics, is it a City Spud album, or is it the new St. Lunatics album with City a part of it?
The St. Lunatic album is called City Free, so we're going to circle it around him mainly now.
And when is the plans for that before we take a break?
We already recorded the album. We're doing a few more songs, and we're going to shoot a DVD so you can see what's going on more instead of trying to talk to everybody through a rap or through, like you said, it's hard to
convey.
Yeah, it's hard to see people, and like all you do is hear me.
Right.
You're not seeing me say something or seeing us talk and seeing how we act together and seeing this. And that's really what the world is now. The world is a nosy world.
Oh, yeah. You especially know, with social media.
You know what I'm saying?
And that's funny that we brought up social media. Social media has become so powerful and so popular. And you guys started in a time period before Napster. Mm-hmm. Then just as, you know, the Lunatics were getting on and everything started popping for you guys, Napster came around. So you even kind of beat it to the punch. That's how, you know, you were able to get a ton of album sales. You know, a few years later, 50 Cent, same popularity, but he gets hit harder on the album sales side because Napster and all that has already become more popular, more prevalent.
Yeah, but he gets the ringtones and the single sales.
That's true, but you
see,
did.
People see the label would make you feel like you're not getting money, like they're not getting money.
Oh, of course.
So it always feel like you want the album sales. The album sales is really for them. You get money off show sales, so you can have the album sales. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't understand. Like, right now, Just a Dream did $5 million on single sales, but they're not gonna count that as an album sale.
Right, but who cares? $5 million is $5 million.
Yeah, but now you got to deal with the barbershop talk because it says 200 and some thousand instead of saying 200 and some thousand.
So do you think that
number 8 went 2 million, number 9 went 4 million?
So do you think that there needs to be, you know, I've been working in the music industry for a long time. I haven't had as much success as the Lunatics as your team has had. And I've worked with your team at different times for different projects as well as Murphs and definitely stuff like that. You know, I've always said that they need to reformulate how they dictate success. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't right. Platinum anymore. Albums, it should be money sold. I think it literally should be like if you're, you know, if you hit this $250 million in sales in general across the board, that makes you a platinum artist, or $500 million, a diamond artist. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that.
It's not. You know, back in the day, I mean, you were in the business aspect for a long time. So you would kind of look at the Tuesday sales and kind of more than a normal person would.
Right,
of course. Not a normal person says stuff like, he only went gold. Like, they didn't.
Like, they don't even understand really what that means.
We didn't do that to Curtis Blow.
Of course not.
We didn't do that to, because we didn't know. You don't know what.
But everybody knows these social media, the internet.
You know, you had to be a member of the team to get an ASCAP. To get the Billboard recognition where you can see who sold something, and it mattered. Doesn't nobody care if the good music or it's not. Your best artist that you love probably sold 20,000, but the one you don't like probably sold 2 million. But it didn't stop you from looking at them or not. Now, if you sell 2 million and I didn't like you, now I'm looking for you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on the queue. We're sitting here with Kiwan from the St. Lunatics talking about Dick Clark. I got a couple of things I want to talk about here, man. Ted Nugent, the situation where he popped off on Barack Obama, obviously being a former, not a former, but a co-artist in the music game as he is. I'd love to hear your opinion on that. And then we're also going to talk a little bit more about the St. Lunatics as well as Freaky Moscato. So stay tuned. We'll be back on the queue right after this. Welcome back to the queue, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Bland joined today by Kiwan of the St. Lunatics and... What are you doing? Are you still drinking the Freaky Moscato over there?
Yeah, why get drunk when you get freaky?
Oh, my goodness. This stuff is kind of potent, bro. What are you guys working with?
Well, it's the difference between our Moscato, like a normal Moscato, usually has the average of 8%. You're going to look at your, go look in your cupboard and check it. And ours is actually 11.5. So that's what makes it, you know, sweet enough for a woman, strong enough for a man. So you both can drink it. You know what I mean?
It's kind of like Chloe Lamar. Is Lamar the woman? Because Chloe looked like a Chewbacca, dude. I mean, she
looked good in person, man.
She could look good in person.
Better in person, man. Like a lot of people might look better in person. Like even when you do Wendy Williams wrong, like if you see in person, you be like, oh, okay, I see what's up.
All right, I'll play along. Okay, I get you. Along. I see what you're saying. All right, so you know who's running for president of the United States this year?
Obama.
Well, who else? Anybody else?
Kiwan.
You gonna run for president of the United States?
Nah, excuse I messed me. Up already too early in my life, man.
You think that's gonna be a, well, do you think you could run on the freaky ticket?
Yeah, I'm gonna try that.
drinkfreaky.com, there you
vote,
go.
Vote for it.
If you guys wanna find out about what he's drinking, you know, check out drinkfreaky.com. Sure. The endorsement of ex-relevant person Ted Nugent has unsurprisingly resulted in some distracting backlash for the GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney, who was forced to respond today through spokeswoman Andrea Saul to a quasi-threat the rocker made over the weekend here in St. Louis about President Obama's life. While stumping for Romney at the NRA convention here in St. Louis, Missouri, Nugent called the president vile and evil, which, okay, people have said worse about presidents. That's not the first time someone's called a president vile or evil, okay? And he told attendees that if Barack Obama becomes president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year.
That's a threat.
Yeah, that's a threat. Now, this isn't the first time Nugent has directed vaguely threatening remarks at Obama. In 2007, Nugent called the then-candidate Obama a piece of crap and invited him to suck on his machine gun. He also followed that up with calling Hillary Clinton a worthless B-word. We're on Fox. We can't really talk about that. can't just cuss whenever we want. The Secret Service, which unlike Romney, probably welcomes any and all distractions, vowed to investigate Mr. Nugent thoroughly. Meanwhile, Romney, via Saul, Andrea Saul, we talked about, Ashley Saul, actually, distanced himself from the Michigander. I don't even know if that's a word. Divisive language is offensive no matter what side of the political aisle it comes from. Mitt Romney believes everyone needs to be civil. At least one person is adhering to Camp Romney's call for civility. Press Secretary Jay Carney, who would not comment on Nugent's remarks except to call them noise. Now, Uncle Teddy, as he's called in the music realm, I'm sure you've heard that before. Uncle Teddy has been around for a long time. Very big gun enthusiast. Loves to go hunting. Little wild, you know, that 70s rocker, you know, snorted some coke kind of vibe coming from him. So he's going to kind of speak his mind, you know, but he speaks his mind like that white guy speaks his mind. You know what I'm saying? He's just going to say something like he proceeds every sentence up with, you know, MRF-er. Do you see what I'm saying? As opposed to like at the end of it, he's like, that SOB, that MRF-er. He's like, MRF-er, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, he just comes at you like punching off the top. A couple things. This kind of harkens back a little bit, in a weird way, to the Dixie Chicks, the incident that they dealt with. I'm sure you heard about a lot when you were on the tours back in 2005, when they made, or 2003, when they made the comments about the president at that time and how they didn't support the wall when they were on stage live. Where do you stand on, first off, musicians speaking politically? Because obviously, from the 60s, we had a lot of famous musicians, Al Green, Bob Dylan,
right.
You know, that literally made their entire life off of making political statements with what they, Jimi Hendrix, with what they said. Where do you stand on that now in 2012 as an artist, you know, and especially from the rap side and the hip hop side of things, where the gloves come off a little bit easier. I mean, this is the side of the musical spectrum where people are more than willing to have battle with each other. Beef, as they put the videos out. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They have, like, stuff where they go at each other on full songs. You know what I'm saying? Where do you stand on that? I mean, it's a speak your mind kind of side.
I mean, when you don't see eye to eye, you go to war. That's what they do in the big world.
True.
It's no different. I just think it's funny how if it's a cancer retreat, or if it's a say no to drugs problem, or if it's anything like that that's dealing with the government, then they call on us. They call on artists to get the word out.
Oh, of course.
But
yeah.
When it's a political view, it's like we're not smart enough to say what we want to say or do we want to do. Now, it's wrong when somebody offers you money or something to do a show or speak on something, and you don't really know what you're saying, or you don't even know what you're doing. You just need the money. You just want
right.
The money.
And I'll be and fair to Uncle Teddy. He's a very versed man in politics, mm-hmm. you know. So it's not like we're coming from a guy who just is shooting his mouth off for the fact that
right. But it's still the way you conduct yourself.
Oh, of course.
You know, and sometimes people don't care, and at the end of the day, it's how you was raised and who you were around to say that's okay to do. So if you're in a room and this is how me and my wife talk to each other all the time, and I get in a room with you and your wife and we talk like this, you're gonna look at it like it's something wrong.
Right.
At the time, I'm like, what?
Right.
I just called her an MF-er.
Yeah.
You know, I just called her a B-word. Like, so what? That's what we do. So. But you understand what you do in your house. Your house is your heaven.
Right.
You know, the streets is hell. So while you talking out loudly like that, then if it was comes from somebody else, then it would be a quicker problem to handle. You know what I'm saying?
And now, being a person who works in rap, obviously, free speech, you know, that's a big thing that is constantly brought up. It has been famous in history, but it's been brought up many times in history. Obviously, you probably don't condone what he is saying, but do you support his right to say what he said?
You can say what you say, just how you say it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like we contradict ourselves every day, man. Like, I don't even deal with it like that, because we'll say, you know, freedom of religion, and then we'll say, is Barack Muslim? Well, if it's freedom of religion, then it shouldn't matter. But this is how things go, you know what I'm saying? So I don't even get deep into that part of somebody's actions, because they're doing it all to make you us talk about it right now.
Well, I am here to actually add to the fire, because let me put this out there, ladies and gentlemen. First off, I love Uncle Teddy. Uncle Teddy's my guy. I think he's a great human being. Unfortunately, I think Uncle Teddy has kind of stepped over the bounds this time. I think he went a little too far. I do support his right to say what he said, just like I supported Rush Limbaugh's right to speak his mind the way he spoke it. I don't necessarily condone or agree with the things that he physically said, but I do respect his ability to have the freedom of speech to say it and to say it to his fans the way he sees. Now, he went a little further today. Today, he went a little further. Ted Nugent is standing by the anti-Obama rhetoric that earned him the upcoming visit from the Secret Service agents, because he said that I'm a black Jew at a Nazi Klan rally. That's the Mitt Romney backer told conservative radio host Dana Lesh, St. Louis's own Dana Lesh. And I'm sure you've met Chris Lesh, Shock City Studios, mm-hmm. those guys down there. Like, his wife has him on, and he says these things. And there are some power-abusing corrupt monsters in our federal government that despise me because I have the audacity to speak the truth. Now, he then went on to call DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz a brain-dead, soulless idiot, and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi a subhuman scoundrel. Okay, those sound kind of cheesy, almost like it's the 1920s. Oh, you're a subhuman scoundrel. Nah, you know, but I don't think it matters. You know what I'm saying? Those things. Nugent also defended his controversial remarks on Glenn Beck's radio show this morning, where he revealed that his Secret Service interview is scheduled for tomorrow. He's not supposed to tell people that. But of course, he's constantly against all the rules. You know what I'm saying? He's a rule breaker.
He's going all the way there with it.
He's going all the way there. We're going to have a little barbecue together, he told Glenn Beck. That's what he told him. And I'm not trying to diminish the seriousness of this, because if the Secret Service are doing it, they are serious. They are dedicated, and I will be as polite and supportive as I possibly can be, which will be thoroughly. More to come, unfortunately, on this situation. But Uncle Teddy, you know, it's just really funny. Like, okay, we expect this from Ted Nugent. If Nelly or you or somebody else said these remarks, mm-hmm. totally different backlash.
That'd be
totally different look.
They'd be right at the show waiting on you.
Yeah, they would. Could you imagine honestly, like, because let's throw it out there for what it is. You know, my last show was called Black and White because we talked about the Trayvon Martin thing. And we got real serious with it, and it was a black and white thing. And I, on my show, it's controversial at times. I'm not unlikely to gloss a situation at all. I'm going to tell you what I personally think, you know, and if I have to use a stereotype to get there, so be it. I think stereotypes do come out of the truth to some extent. Not complete truth, but there is truth to every stereotype. Nobody just wakes up one morning, like I said on the last show, and just creates a stereotype. I think Barack Obama has a lot of fans on the urban and African-American side because he is black. And that's obvious. You know, it's not so much their political beliefs. It's the fact that he is black. And I think that there is, you know, I'm a moderate. You might not know this. I'm a moderate. I tend to vote. I voted for Barack Obama. And as I've said 40 times on this show, you can download all the episodes at theqnow.com and listen to me say it in full audio. I will plan on voting for Barack Obama again. Because I'm not seeing anybody on that side of the political spectrum that's saying anything of importance.
And that's the point, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the. I mean, if there was somebody of more value than Barack Obama in the current situation.
Okay. Now let me ask you a question.
Go for it. Please.
Now, if Barack Obama stood on the podium and said, "What it do, shawty? It's all about getting that paper. You know, we do what we do and we doing it. You dig?"
Okay.
He black.
Right.
Would you vote for him?
You know,
would the urban community vote for him?
I don't know, but I no. I'm not saying that I would. No, let me answer your question.
Okay.
I'm not one of those people that is shallow. Okay, I don't just take what I see. Like, he drinks a beer at a bar one night.
I'm talking about the urban community.
But do you think the urban community would vote for him?
Yeah,
I do. I not to be disrespectful and not in a negative way, not in a slam towards the urban community. Mm. I don't think all of them would. Mm. I don't think it's one of those things where every single human being who happens to be African American would vote for him because he's black.
A lot of the urban community that have lack of knowledge don't vote anyway.
Oh, now there's another side of the game.
So that cuts it all. Cuts your
That's point. Another side of the game
now,
nobody ever
okay,
talks
look
about.
Look at this. I'm telling you about the,
sure,
like,
go for it.
Like a real conversation.
Knock it out.
Okay. If I'm in a room and I have a brand new car outside.
Right.
I have one friend that goes to SLU.
Uh-huh.
He wears his slacks.
Yep.
Button his tie. He goes to work. He
his
has
name
a wife.
Quick.
He has two kids.
you his know what I'm saying? Quick.
You feel me?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I have another guy over here that's always talking about, I'm carrying my gun. I'm doing this. I'm ready to smoke some, or, you know,
is
do
his
whatever.
Name Christopher?
And it's about who would you lend your car to? Just because he's colored doesn't mean I would lend my car to a person that has less responsibility
now, see,
with my world.
To answer your question originally, though, you asked, would I vote for him? And then I went into my little diatribe.
Right.
I am not, like, I got the glue on the gloss.
Right.
For me, personally, white, black, doesn't matter. I care about literally what's behind it. He can talk however he wants to up on that podium. And if that's how he chooses to be seen or shown, that's his choice.
But, it's not
but as
work.
Long as his policies, his behind the scenes, what he believes in, his platform itself, is in the same line as my platform, I don't care how far off the communication barrier might be. I know for a fact that he's speaking what I believe too. So right. I'm more than willing to vote for somebody. But I do think you're right. There are a certain group of people that, black and white, and all colors, that are going to take certain things. Like, if he spoke like that on the podium to white people, or to a white, like, white people heard that, most of them would, they're already angry. Let's just put it out there
for
what it is.
The GOP,
that's right. They never, but they don't understand it.
Nothing went platinum because
they don't get it.
People.
They don't get it. The people don't get it. See, I'm a moderate. I get it.
That's barbershop talk, just saying it.
But I'm just saying, no. But I get it. Like, that's the beauty of me as a moderate. Right. I get it. I see both sides of the spectrum. Right. I understand the crazy whack job Tea Partiers over here that are like, he's black and I hate him. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, why do you hate him?
Right.
They never have an answer.
They know.
Their only answer is, he's black and I don't like him. Because that's just who they are as people. You know, I don't like Mitt Romney because I don't think Mitt Romney literally is coming to the table with anything to say as far as policies. You know, it's more of, I'm going to argue with these guys about why I'm better than them. I'm not going to tell anybody. Like, if I was running for president of the United States right now on the Freaky Moscato platform, which we've already developed earlier in the show.
Right.
If I was running on that platform, the first words out of my mouth every single time is, that's great and all, but I really don't care about that. I want to talk to you guys about what I want to do to fix the United States.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want to do. And every time they'd be like, yeah, but you know, in college you were arrested for this or you did this. And I'd be like, yes, sir, a lot of people get arrested for a lot of different things. I'm not going to get into that right now. Listen, I want to tell you guys all about what I think about what we should do with health, how we should handle our healthcare reform, or how we should do this. I think the people would be more receptive to a person. It doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum they are. If that person steps up and says those things and is just not worried about the BS argument over here, he's just talking or she's just talking to the people about the. I think they'll take him more seriously, and then they'll already start to look like a potential candidate for president of the United States. They don't have to be built up as in this guy's better than that guy. It'll be like, well, this guy just wants to talk about our country. He just wants to talk about what we're working on.
Right. It's not good for TV. But, you know what I'm saying? A lot of times I think a lot of the angles they went at Barack was to down him. So when you keep trying to down him and he is articulate, you're losing every time. Instead of doing what you said and figure out how can we help this. Then when you go to debate, it's really about, it's not really about winning or losing, it's about making him lose.
Right.
You know, so it's like, am I really getting an answer out of it? Or am I just saying it different than he said? It's like a lawyer. It's like, but he's guilty and you just made him innocent because you didn't say it right. You know what I'm saying? And
fair
like,
enough.
It's not about what's really helping the community. Like, we can fight for healthcare, but when are we going to take our health so we won't even need healthcare?
That's a good point.
But we're not, because the top money maker in America is illegal drugs and legal drugs. So we're not going to do that. So we need to stop talking about that. We keep saying it, but there's no way you can fight health care if you're not taking care of your health. Because as long as you build two McDonald's,
you're going
to
have one debate. You're going to walk yourself into a circle in a second here.
It's cool. I'm a vegan. I'm cool. But what I'm saying is that we need to take care of our health before we fight for health care all the time.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Speaking of health, you got any animals?
No.
Are you an animal guy, or is it just...
I'm not an animal guy.
I'm not
a fish.
I'm not an animal guy either.
I had fish. My eel ate them all, though.
You have an eel that ate all your fish?
Yeah.
Did they look like Nemo and Dory?
I had some of those.
Okay. Some clownfish?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a problem. We have a problem. We have a problem with the life of a dog, actually. And I talked about this. You know, I previewed this for everybody out there. A Texas man claims his beloved dog, Cisco, was shot point-blank by a police officer who responded to a call at the wrong address. Michael Paxton, 40, said he and his Australian cattle dog, Cisco, were relaxing and playing Frisbee in his Austin backyard on Saturday afternoon when he decided to go get something from the truck in his driveway. As he approached the truck, he saw something from the corner of his eye and looked up to see it was a police officer who immediately drew his weapon and told Paxton to put his hands up. He had a taser. He had pepper spray. I don't understand why, in broad daylight, he pulled a gun on me. I wasn't running. I wasn't hiding, Paxton told the ABCNews.com earlier this week. I was just saying, I live here. I was panicking. I was afraid for my life. I mean, guy's got a gun on you, of course. Paxton said he heard Cisco, who weighed about 50 pounds, barking and coming towards him from the backyard. I said, don't shoot him. Don't shoot my dog. He won't bite you. But he shot him just like that. And all happened in under 30 seconds, Paxton said. There was no attack on the officer other than barking and challenging him. Austin Police Corporal Anthony Hippolito told ABCNews.com that the officer did respond to the wrong address, but it was the address provided by the 911 call. The call came in from the house next to Paxton. Hippolito said that the dash cam footage shows the dog barking and attacking the officer. The officer was basically in retreat and asked the owner to grab the dog, Hippolito said. He wasn't able to, and the dog continued to attack, and that's when the officer discharged his firearm. Now, I've seen the video. They've released the video of this situation. And this is kind of a gray area deal. I can't blame one side or the other. The officer on the video is getting attacked by the dog. Oh. The dog is coming after him, and he pulls his gun out, and he's shooting it. Now, to his defense, the other guy said, yes, but he didn't give me a chance to corral the dog. Like, he just had me with my hands up, yeah. And I'm telling him, my dog's coming, don't shoot the dog, and you hear that on the thing. Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying? And it's like, it's just a situation that kind of fell apart all the way around. In this kind of a situation, where do you stand? Like, is this a, you know, too bad, dog's attacking a guy, we got to take it out? Or you kind of more like maybe the situation could have been handled a different way?
I don't know. We made them a man best friend, so they're going to protect their people.
That's true. They're going to protect their people.
But it's weird how we approach the pet situation anyway. You know what I mean? Like, a dog lifespan is what, 7 years, 8 years?
Something like that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you're buying it to die, for real.
Right, that's true. It's only going to be around like 10 years tops.
I'm not mad at it, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, like, if you look at the history of dogs, then you don't know their mind frame, and I don't think you want to deal with a bite and then shoot.
Right, of course.
You know what I'm saying? Or me losing and
shoot now, ask
questions
later.
The guy was
later.
So scared, he probably kept his hands up and didn't get the dog because he's in a scared situation because he didn't do anything.
Now, here's the question. Do you think if the guy puts his hands down and starts to go after the dog, the officer shoots him?
I don't know, but I'd rather the dog to shoot me.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, and of course, in this situation, you don't want to hear that somebody lost their best friend.
No, you don't want to hear that. You don't.
But at this, and there was the wrong address. I mean, he wasn't at the right address. Right. It was the house next door, you know, and at one point in the video, the guy's like, he starts asking him about his girlfriend, and the guy's with his hands up. He's like, "Why do you care about my girlfriend?" Because it was a domestic disturbance at the next door neighbor's house.
And he could have been going in the car to get something.
Exactly. And so the police officer never knows, you know. But I think we get wrapped into this a lot.
Yeah, buy him a new dog.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I don't know what to say about that.
I think it's about time for us to do some quick letters from the. From the fan base.
Let's do it.
Everybody out there, if you want to ever send me a letter, which a lot of these people do, go to theqnow.com. You can find out episodes, new episodes. You can always get a hold of me at theqnow.com, and you can send me your messages. This is where they come. Now, here on the queue, we like to break these down. So I think I got time for at least one story, and then we're going to get out of here.
Let's do it.
Mark. Big fan of the show, and I think you are hilarious when you talk about Tea Party supporters. Yeah, they suck. I want to submit this to hear what you have to say. Now, I've got to hear your opinion. My boyfriend and I were out on town having a nice walkabout in the main street area. We spotted a good mutual male friend of ours. As we were going up to say hello, a girl dramatically ran up and kissed him. Not a "this is my sister and we're having an afternoon shopping trip" kiss either, but I know this woman in the biblical sense kiss, which would be fine. I'm no prude, but this woman isn't his wife. We know because his wife is not only awesome and better looking, but one of my best friends. We clutched our pearls in dramatic southern fashion, and Boo had the common sense to usher me away unspotted before I caused an "oh hell no" Jerry Springer scene. Now what? We're both very good friends with the couple and do coupley double date things together all the time. Being the rational male type, Boo insisted, she called him Boo, insisted that this isn't our place to say anything. The perpetrator should come clean on his own and we should stay out of it. Naturally, this is at odds with my own loyalty to my girlfriend, who I know would want to be informed, and I would do the same for me in addition. I'm the owner of the world's worst poker face. She's going to know something's up if we suddenly cancel our double dates, act strange around them. For heaven forbid, I lunge across the dinner table and kick her husband in the nuts. She's going to be pissed if she finds out we knew and didn't say anything. I would also feel bad ruining the bromance between our guys by saying something, causing a divorce and subsequent division of friendships and assets. I don't want to take sides, but I admittedly am biased. Should we wait until it comes up or blow the whistle? Please help. I am going to be full out with you. You know, this is a really sticky situation, and it really comes down, in my opinion, to how far you want to push the deal. You know what I'm saying? If you're one of those people that just can't hold a secret in, you know, and this is your best. Okay, this is the situation. You're in the situation, Kiwan. Mm-hmm. Okay? Is Murph married? Murph married, not married? No, he's not married?
Might as well say so.
Okay, he is. Maybe he is. Okay, right. Let's say Murph's married.
His girlfriend.
Let's say Murph's married.
Okay, cool.
Another girl comes running up in front of you and your wife and kisses him that's not his girlfriend, not his wife, not anything.
Right.
Okay? Do you feel necessary being friends with the girlfriend? Would you and your wife feel comfortable telling on Murph, your brother? Or, you know, is this one of those things where you'd have to protect Murph?
No, I wouldn't. I'd protect Murph.
Well, of course. I mean, he's your brother,
my friend, if we're friends and we all get together because of...
Okay, let's say it's City Spud. City Spud situation. City Spud's the other guy, not
my
Murph.
Brother, you need to go outside the camp.
I got to go outside the camp.
They
okay.
are my brothers. Okay, if I seen... Okay, me and you, you know...
Me and you.
We met each other, and me and my wife were cool with you and your wife.
Right.
And we seen you kiss another girl that wasn't your wife.
Right.
Okay. It depends on how cool I am with you personally.
Right.
Too.
Of course.
You know, is you my wife's friend, husband, or are you my friend and we're double dating? You know what I'm saying?
Right, I got you.
And
okay.
If she feel, I'm going to hold my ground. I mean, I'm not going to say that's not on me.
How would your wife handle it? How do you think she'd handle it?
I would, if she can't.
Knowing her bondship with her friends, her good friends, like how would she handle it?
I mean, I think we should talk to you first.
Okay, I think that's fine. You know what? And actually, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's the perfect answer for this person before we get out of here. Mm-hmm. I think we did come to a really good idea. I think you guys should sit down with your friend, the guy.
Yeah, the guy.
And talk to him first. And discuss it with him.
I'm going to tell her, or they're probably going to say, she probably knows already. Like a lot of people who are cheating, the other person already kind of know. They just need the pure evidence, but they already feel it in the household a lot of times, man. When somebody naturally just come out and at the end of the story, that might be a girl that, you know, you never know, man. You never know what the situation is and how it looks. A look can be
very, very.
Man,
yeah.
That's when you don't want it to happen. You
know, oh yeah, it could be
a look or a text.
It could just wake you
anything,
up.
A conversation can look like it is, but it's not really that. So let him get a chance to explain himself too.
All right, fair enough.
You go to her and then jump in, because they're not going to stop. They're going to think about it for 20 years instead of just saying, "Hey, no, that was Niecy from such and such, and she went too far. And when you turned your head, you ain't see me push her in the face and tell her don't do that ever again." You know what I'm saying? Like,
Fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's about time for us to get out of here on the show. I want to first off thank Kiwan so much for coming on to the show and talking with me today and breaking it all down. Good friends, I appreciate it. I do definitely appreciate it. Go ahead, pop some of those things. Drinkfreaky.com.
Drinkfreaky.com. You can order anywhere, like 43 states.
And you provide a barbecue, you said. Free barbecue for everybody who orders.
We got you, whatever you got. We also have our new air freshener called AirPlay. The website is airplayfresh.com. You can look it up in your nearest location. We are dirt cheaps and Napa and so forth and so on.
You're all over the place, all over the nation.
Yeah, it's a new thing going on, man. You know, we like to be fresh, so we like our environment to be fresh too, man.
Alright, fair enough. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, they can always go to probably drinkfreaky.com.
Drinkfreaky.com. You can go to Twitter.
Oh yeah, yeah, do Twitter. Kiwan STL.
KYJUANSTL. We're on Instagram, Facebook. I'm still Kiwan. You can find me on like 4 Facebook.
Don't do Instagram. It's going to fade. I don't care how much they spend money on it. It's just going
to
fall off.
What you got to do, man, to get what you got to get.
All right, fair enough. Also, I want to be congratulations to the big winners of the Adam Carolla tickets, Kathy Hammer and Ani Salo. Way to go, guys. Congratulations on winning. And do not forget to listen to the past episodes and new episodes each week of theqnow.com. Find out about me, the show, and you can contact us there too. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of my friend Kiwan and the St. Lunatics, keep your eyes open. The new City Free is coming up. It's coming up soon. So we're going to get out of here on the queue. Thank you so much. God bless the United States and God bless all of you.
Peace.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Fresh up out the kitchen, cooking up some new shoes. Needed a wardrobe, gotta keep the lights on. We hustle out of necessity. Ain't in the crew, good, dope. We hopeless in the mold. Fresh up out the kitchen, like the future. You are not invited.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland, and joined after that wonderful interview with Kiwan, somebody has decided to infiltrate the studios of the queue, and that one person is Anthony Cabral. You are a popular
person.
Yes,
how are you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. You are a very, very popular individual. Last time we did our show, we had the bully discussion.
We did have a bully discussion.
It was a
quite
huge,
heated bully discussion.
A very extremely heated bully discussion. And anyway, you were one of the more popular characters that I've had on the queue.
Really?
Of course.
I feel honored and humbled.
Why is it that I hear you better than I hear myself? I don't know what it is. It could be these headphones. It's just one of those things. Anyway, regardless of that, welcome back to the queue.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
And a lot of big things been going on in your life since you were on the queue the last time arguing with me about Bully. You've actually taken a step. A step.
I've taken a huge step. A giant step in filmmaker kind.
And that step would be the implementation of a Kickstarter campaign to produce two films.
I've officially launched a crowdsourcing or crowdfunding campaign using Kickstarter as my outreach software, basically, using Kickstarter as my go-between to raise funds for a short film project. And in fact, my project is two short films together, kind of in one shoot, two shorts. And we're trying to raise money so that I can venture into the world of directing. I've worked on a lot of projects over the years, which you've been made very aware of.
I have been aware of them. I've never been invited to a single one.
Well, yes, I have been very involved in a lot of productions over the course of the last several years as an assistant director or camera operator or production assistant. And this is my venture into...
Is your baby?
These two films would definitely qualify as my baby. These two films would actually be very much right there.
Are they to the effect or the stellar setting that maybe Ryan Seacrest was to one passed away Mr. Dick Clark that we talked about in the last hour?
That would be very, very humbling.
Very humbling if you were at that level.
Yeah, it'd be very humbling if you're going to compare me to the Seacrest, to the Dick Clark.
No! I don't want to compare you to those guys.
But I mean, in that respect,
pretty talented.
I've worked on a lot of projects for a lot of great filmmakers over the years, but I've never been, and I've gone to see those films at film festivals and at film screenings across the country, but I've never been the filmmaker that gets to go up at the end of the film at the Q&A and answer questions about my movie. Now it's kind of
And now you get to be that guy.
Yeah, it's going
to
be my venture to make my two movies that I can say these are my movies, officially directed by me, Anthony Cabral.
And the question I have for you is, so taking this big step, going this direction.
Big step.
Where do I sign on to be the right-hand man who is your Jason Mewes to your Kevin Smith? The Jason Mewes to your Kevin Smith. Where do I fall into that category? Does the Q hold it? Like, are you?
So you're asking if you're
my
stoned, retarded friend who hangs around and doesn't do anything?
Stoned? Not quite stoned, but can we make a third project? Can we do the documentary of the Q?
I'm sure that coming up with a documentary for the Q is very possible. You know,
very possible.
I know that as well as I have these own projects on the table, I have a couple other projects that are in the works, a couple documentary style projects and a couple narrative style projects, but. Definitely.
Anything about porn?
Nothing about porn. That's not my style.
Okay.
No.
Just asking.
I fought for years to keep my nose clean and not, you know, fall into that universe, so I'm not going to venture into the porn universe. But in that same respect, though, I'm very fortunate that if you really wanted to make a documentary of the Q and of what you have embarked on in the journey of the Q-Cast, theqcastnow.com.
Yes.
Then
it's the Q now.com.
Oh, the Q now.
You just destroyed
the Q
all
now?
My marketing and everything for the show that we've been working on for years and years.
You for example, my website where you can find out and hit the link to get to my, you know, crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter is acefilms.com. There's a thing right on the front there. It shows you how we're doing, and you can hit the link and you can go right in and contribute to the project, which is it's not an investment. It's completely a donation basis thing, and there's little perk levels you can sign up for, which I would love to see. I would love to see, and of course, I will come back here, and okay. I will divulge to the Q audience,
okay,
just how supportive Dr. Bland is to the Ace Film Shorts project that's up there.
$10,000.
And hey, you know, you can
$10,000.
You can give anywhere. You can give anywhere from $1 to $10,000. It's the highest you can give.
$10,000.
My perk level start at $10, go to $5,000. If you want to give $10, in fact, you know what, Mark Blaine, I'll even say it now.
Stop moving the mic around in the studio. You are just destroying the sound of the show.
I'm not liking the way it's sitting here. Okay, so I'll say it right now. I will be that guy. So, Dr. Bland.
Yes.
In front of your audience.
Yes.
As the director of two short motion pictures.
Yes.
I will call you out. If you put in $10,000, I will make sure that you have a role in one of my films. In fact, I'll even go so far as to say this. If your audience, if the audience of the Q,
the
audience of the Qnow.com, go on to my Kickstarter campaign. You can find the link on acefilms.com. You can click the link and go straight to my Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
And you can search Ace Films Shorts on Kickstarter. You can find my campaign here in St. Louis. If you and or the Q fans contribute over $10,000, Mark Bland will be in one of my movies.
I'll be in one of your
movies. I will make sure that Mark Bland has a line and more than just a here kind of thing. I'll make sure that Mark Bland is in one of my movies.
I want to do it now. If we're going to do this, I want to do it Boogie Nights-esque. I want to do it Boogie Nights style. Like, put me in some roller skates, some hot pants.
I'm still the director, so you still have to at least hear to what I say when it comes to how you look on camera.
I will listen my fatness up.
But I'm telling you, if you and your audience can come up with 10 grand to contribute towards my Kickstarter campaign, I will make sure that Mark Bland is on screen with dialogue in a credited acting role in one of the Ace Film shorts that I'm here to produce.
I pledge $10,000 over the next 10,000 years. $1 per year for the next 10,000 years.
And the way that we'll just the way that we'll verify this is that if a member of your audience contributes to the project, and once they contribute, they send either a message to me or post a comment that, hey, I'm a listener of the Q.
You are going
to
get absolutely
and
nothing.
And I am donating X amount of dollars to your project.
People don't care.
I will keep a running tally in my updates of how Mark Bland is doing.
Nobody will divulge that money. Nobody's going to come to the table. I don't have any fans. You don't understand.
Hey, I'm telling you.
Coming on the show?
I know you have fans because we've discussed already that, you know, the controversy that we've already sparked up before has been great radio.
Oh, it has
for
been
for Dr. Bland here on
the
Q-cast. All right.
So let's move on with the Q a little bit.
We're moving on a little bit.
We'll come back
a little bit to my
Netflix.
Shameless plug.
You ever heard of Netflix?
Of course I have.
Netflix plans to make an entire new season of Arrested Development available for streaming on same day.
Yes.
Speaking with the reporters yesterday, or recently,
yes,
at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Las Vegas, Netflix Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos confirmed the company's plan to release all 10 episodes of Arrested Development's highly anticipated fourth season at the same time.
Sure.
Sarandos didn't provide an exact date, but the revived series is expected to debut early next year. Show creator Mitch Hurwitz, Hurwitz, who also spoke yesterday, revealed new details about what the new season had in store for the Bluth family. Because everybody is on separate shows, we had this idea to do a kind of anthology series and meet the characters.
Sure.
That's what he told the panel. And so they're going to release.
For a while, though. This has been discussed for a long time. A bigger news would have been if you dropped the hammer that Jason Bateman was revealing that the Arrested Development movie was actually taking place. The Arrested Development TV series being picked up by Netflix actually happened a short while ago, and it's been discussed for quite a while in the industry. But I think what's to look at it in the scheme of a television program to be completely released all at one time.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring up.
The entire season at one time on Netflix kind of really makes a huge. It's kind of a huge coup.
That's what I wanted to bring up. That was my point. My point was very simply the fact that, basically, we're getting feedback in somebody's headphones or microphone. It don't matter. It's probably this cord. Ah, these mics at these studios, I swear. Anyway, regardless of that, it's that idea.
Sure.
The idea that we are going to release an entire season. Now, you worked on Breakout Kings.
I did work on Breakout Kings.
Now, imagine if Breakout Kings
had
decided to just grab the entire, and I mean the entire season you worked on and release it all at once. Now, it's more difficult to do with a network.
Sure, of course. It's a rough thing for the audience. It's a rough thing for viewers. I mean, you can sit down all at one time and watch the entire season. That's the advantage to something like Netflix
or a subscription
video on demand service like Netflix.
They do that now.
You can watch an entire season of something that's old school.
I know people that'll knock out 4 hours straight of a television show.
Oh, sure. I know.
Four one-hour episodes, and they'll do it four days in a row and do it
the
entire
season.
I've
done it before myself. I'm not denying it.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that, you know, a big thing is this is a new show. And, you know, for advertising dollars and everything else, like, It's a completely new kind of formula to release the entire season all at one time, first run on Netflix. And I think that in that same respect, there's going to be a lot of questions about, you know, royalties, payment back to actors and everything else. And not to mention to see how well the Netflix views translate to DVD sales, to ancillary sales.
It's almost like they're trying to make that move like home box office or Showtime.
I think they are.
And the same idea.
I think they truly are.
They want to become that network possibility.
Well, if you think back historically, you know, back in the day, I remember when HBO used to only cost a couple dollars per month to add to your cable lineup. Now it's pretty expensive. And I think
it's like $15 a month.
Right. In the same respect, though, I mean, how long is it going to be before, you know, Netflix is, you know, that much per month for just streaming? And they are going to have to spend more money.
Do you think they're going to hurt themselves if they go up to that level, though?
No, I think that what it is I think you're going to end up with Netflix being just like an HBO or something
only
else.
Only if they have the same quality as FX and all those stations.
Well, I think that what you're going to get is you're going to have a completely independent, more internet cable station. It's basically what's going to be a cable station that is completely independent of any cable network, that streams via the internet, streams to your smartphone, streams to your computer, streams to your smart TVs through a device. I think you're going to end up with a new cable network being Netflix versus what you've got now, which is like an HBO that has a schedule, even though they have their VOD system that you can get on most cable systems. But like, there will be a schedule. Like, you pick what you want.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, and we've talked about that here on the show before. And in fact, I think you and me have talked about it on the queue before, in the idea that eventually the idea of traditional cable systems in general go by the wayside eventually. And what it ends up turning into is...
That one wasn't me, but I agree with you.
You got an Ethernet cable hooked up to the back of your TV.
Yeah.
And instead of...
Yeah, that was other shows.
Instead of, like, instead of... If I want to buy the WWE pay-per-view or a boxing event...
Sure.
I just go straight to whatever the pay-per-view provider is, and I just buy it straight up, and then it streams right to my TV in high def. Or if I want HBO's package, I go to HBO.com, and I buy their monthly subscription package.
Sure.
Then I just get all their shows.
Yes.
That's it. Like, it's almost an a la carte type situation.
Yes.
Now, let's move on real quick.
Moving on.
Have you heard about the crappy teacher?
The crappy teacher?
There's a crappy teacher.
I heard about the six-year-old in handcuffs, but I haven't heard about the crappy teacher.
A school teacher in Washburn, Missouri.
Okay.
You ever been to Missouri?
I've been to Missouri.
Okay.
Gotta live there.
Is under fire today for allegedly refusing to let a kindergartner go to the restroom and then forcing her to remain seated in class even after she defecated on herself.
That's a little far.
The girl's mother, Lisa Skidmore, says the teacher asked students to go to the bathroom before a math test and then refused to let the students leave while the test was being conducted. The six-year-old was unable to keep herself from evacuating her bowels, but was told to remain seated until test time was over, approximately 15 minutes. Okay, now hold on. Okay, let me finish the story. They didn't even bother trying to clean her up or anything, says Skidmore. She still had poop, diarrhea, poop coming out of the back, up her front, and down her legs. The teacher did hand the girl a trash bag, but Skidmore says that she was far from sufficient. You don't even treat a dog that way, she told KY3 News. I've got a funny story to add on top of
this. That's down by Springfield if it's on KY3 News, yes.
Yes. School District Superintendent Bob Walker said he regretted the incident and has instructed the teachers to be more sensitive in similar situations going forward. The family said it won't be pressing charges, but the girl's father expressed hope that the parties responsible for his daughter's harrowing ordeal truly understood the error of their ways.
Okay.
If any parents send their kid to school with crappy pants, diarrhea type crap, wrapped up in a garbage bag, stenched badly, I believe with all my heart those parents would be facing criminal charges, he said.
Sure.
I believe that with all my heart.
Now, yeah, no, completely.
Okay, let's talk about this for a minute.
Okay.
Now, have I told you my story of going to see the movie Super Troopers?
No.
Okay. So let me break down the story of my Super Troopers for you and the listening fan base out there of the queue. On my way to the movie The Super Troopers, we go to the Dollar Show out in St. Charles, Missouri.
Okay.
St. Andrew Cinema is the exact place.
Location. Sure, I know where St. Andrew's is.
And, you know, back then it was a dollar to see movies that were getting ready to almost be released on DVD, but not quite there.
Sure.
So going in, a lady, I will be very honest with you, a black lady and her husband had, you know, four or five kids with them. And they were taking them to see Super Troopers. Now, first off, I don't think that they understood or expected what Super Troopers was going to be. They were probably thinking campy comedy.
Sure.
We're talking about kids aging from the range of probably five or six all the way up to 12, 13 years old.
Okay. Sure.
I go into the restroom.
Okay.
One of their children, who I noticed was with them out there, comes into the restroom behind me, and he goes into the stall.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the stall, and he's probably in there, and I'm in there for like 30, 40 seconds total.
Sure.
He starts screaming at the top of his lungs. Screaming. Now, of course, the mom thinks something bad's happening to her kid.
Okay.
It's me and another gentleman at the urinals over here. He's in one of the two stalls over against this wall.
Sure.
The mom, while we're just dangling out there doing our thing, She comes a running into the bathroom. What y'all doing to my baby? Okay. As soon as she gets into the restroom, she sees that we're standing up at the urinals doing our thing and nothing's going on with the baby. The kid kicks open the door, basically. She's like, are you in there? He's like, yeah. He opens the door. When he does, his pants are all the way down to his ankles.
God.
He's hanging out, but he has got poop everywhere. All over his pants, all over his legs, all over the seat of the toilet. Like, he just didn't make it in time. Young kid. We're talking 6 years old. Tops.
Okay.
5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
He just didn't make it. Just didn't make it to the toilet in time.
Okay.
All over the place. Of course.
We've all been.
We're all kind of standing there, like, me and the guy are kind of in awe, the other gentleman that's in there. We clean ourselves up and we get out of there, and then we kind of let the management know that there's a lady with her child in the bathroom. Seems to be an issue. Might want to send someone in there in a few minutes to rectify the cleanliness of
the situation.
The cleanliness of said restroom.
Yes.
So, we go down into the theater, me and my wife, and we sit down. And the dad and the 3 or 4 other kids are sitting literally, like, down by the screen. They're, like, near the front.
Okay.
All of a sudden, about 10 minutes into the movie, okay?
Okay.
We're sitting there, and all of a sudden, we hear shuffling. Shh, 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 shh. Come walking through the door next to us.
Shuffling.
She had literally.
Oh, God. I'm afraid of where you're going to go.
Taken a trash bag, cut 2 holes in the bottom of it, picked it up, wrapped it around him, cinched it with a belt, did clean up the underwear, didn't clean up the poop, didn't take the kid home, just wrapped it with a trash bag, cinched it with a belt, and then as they're coming into the theater, she's like, you're not going to ruin movie night for the rest of us. So she brought him in with defecated feces all over his pants and his shorts and everything like that. 6 years old, sits him down in the front row of Super Troopers. Now, we didn't smell nothing.
Note to self, let's not go to that theater.
Let's not do that again. But that was a little over the top,
that's,
if you ask
but
me.
But that's severe. And that's something that's pretty disrespectful.
And that's,
I mean,
what,
like,
we're dealing with here.
Well, and mind you, I can understand. Okay, first off, in a real quick note, I know that over in Swansea, Illinois, last night on the news, I remember seeing something about the fact that there was a gentleman in hot water because he made his daughter, a little girl, like 6 years old or whatever,
okay,
sit in front of her school.
Right.
Wearing a sign, both front and back, like a placard signs, you know, whatever.
But he 6 years old.
Made it out of cardboard. Front and back said, I steal from others and lie about it.
Now, that's fine when the kid's 17.
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. They interviewed the little girl who basically very embarrassedly told the reporter, you know, they said, how do you feel about that? And she said, I was embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And the father, you know, the father then, when it cut back to him, I'm saying, well, that was the goal. The goal was I wanted her to understand that this is not something to do. Okay. Now, the school called the cops on the father, threatened to have the father arrested, told the father if he ever comes back into something like it again, they're going to have him arrested for trespassing. Ridiculous. He is disciplining his own daughter.
At the same point, their argument was the trespassing and doing it on school property.
Well,
they weren't really knocking him.
She did it at the edge of school property as the kids were coming into school on the bus. So all the kids had to see her with the sign.
Right. Now, you know, it's a gray area.
In the same token, though, if the mom is trying to teach the kid a lesson to say, well, you should make it to the bathroom on time, that's a little bit more ridiculous. She should have taken the kid home and cleaned the kid up. I mean, there's been a lot of stories about kids right now. Like the kid, I believe it was in Florida, the 6-year-old girl who was put in handcuffs. And the mom's like, they put my baby in handcuffs. And I'm like, the kid was biting teachers, biting the police, kicking, screaming, punching, and destroying the office
but
that she was sitting in.
Like, you, cause
she
you
was,
don't need to put a kid
okay,
like that in
the
handcuffs.
The kid was biting, kicking, screaming,
if you
and
are a grown
and
adult
causing,
and you can't control a 6-year-old.
Causing destruction on school grounds. And when the police came, for them to take this girl to the police station, they put the girl in handcuffs. Now, it is by order of the police department that anyone transported to the police department is put
in
handcuffs.
Has to be put in handcuffs, I get it.
Regardless of age. And at the same token, if you are being that violent, I don't care how old you are, if you're being so violent that you are in full flailing regalia of kicking and screaming and biting, put the kid in handcuffs. Let's get it under control.
All right. I mean, I can see the point. I can see the purpose. But I think that there's Like, with the dad. Okay, she's six.
We're teaching kids terrible lessons. Letting your kid go with a whole poopy outfit to the theater?
But this.
That's ridiculous.
This right here, though. The story of the six-year-old who's sitting in class. First off,
that is
what teacher?
That teacher should be kicked out and fired.
Okay, first off.
That's disrespectful. That's wrong. Completely wrong. That's not a parent.
What teacher at all in this entire situation?
Right.
Is giving six-year-olds time tests. They're six. Time test where, like you take an SAT, you can't leave for 40 minutes.
That's,
like,
that's kind of
that's a little over the top for a kindergarten class.
A little bit much, yeah.
Or even a first grade class.
Sure.
So there's already something wrong with that. Now, if it's a time test for like 5 minutes, that's one thing. But at the same point.
Well, it's a 15-minute time test, right? 15 minutes?
Yeah, it was a
15-minute test.
Right. But at the same point, you're dealing with 5 and 6-year-olds.
Yes.
These are kids that are just barely out of potty training in some cases.
Sure.
Because I'm working with my daughter right now on potty training. She's 3.
Sure.
It ain't going great. It ain't going horrible, sure. But it ain't going great. And the chances are she could be 4 or 5 and maybe still having an accident here or there is very plausible.
Of course.
So the teacher should have already been well understood in the virtues of a child who is basically not able to control itself yet.
Like the other situations I described.
Seventh graders, that's a different story.
One was a student destroying school property and causing so much of a scene. 2 involved parents, but that one is a teacher. I mean, that's as bad as a teacher hauling off and hitting a kid, in my opinion.
Okay.
If you're going to let a kid sit there after he has accidentally defecated on himself and make him sit there as punishment, that's just disrespectful. That is not a teacher teaching anything to that child other than, you know, do what I say, no questions asked.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on the Q, and when we come back in
more
that time.
More shameless plugs.
More shameless plugs. But in that time, why don't you go check out acefilms.com.
Acefilms.com.
And when we come back on the Q, we're going to have more with Tony Cabral on the Q.
Yes, you will.
We'll be back right here on KYRO after this. Welcome back to the Q. Mark Bland joined by Tony Cabral today. Had Kiwan from the St. Lunatics in earlier. Great interview with him. We're having a lot of fun here on the Q, and it's already been an exciting show, Tony.
It has.
It has already been an extremely exciting show. We have ourselves defecating 6-year-olds, as well as everything else in between.
Sure.
And your film.
Yes. I'm doing my crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter. It's titled Ace Film Shorts, and the title of both films are Last Rites and One Lone Soldier.
Yep.
And so it's one shoot, 2 shorts. My campaign is trying to raise $18,500 for me to produce both films on a 4-day shoot that I'll do in late June or early July. And you can go to acefilms.com. There's a link right there with the widget that takes you over to the Kickstarter campaign, or you can get on Kickstarter itself and just search for Ace Films Shorts. And or just click in St. Louis. It's one of the ones that's currently funding in the St. Louis category. And it is under the film category as well, because there's many categories here in Kickstarter. But at the same token, it's going on right now. And hopefully we can hit our goal. And like I said before the break, that if the audience and listeners of The Q put in a culmination of $10,000 or more towards the project, and they make sure that they let me know that they are listeners of The Q, and I hit $10,000, I will make sure that Dr. Mark Bland, the curator of The Q, gets a speaking role in one of my movies.
Okay.
I'll make sure that you have your own special speaking acting role, Dr. Bland.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm telling
you. Do you remember when there was a big oil spill down in the Gulf of Mexico a few years ago?
Did it happen to be a foreign company that screwed up American waters?
BP.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I hate them.
Well.
Being honest. What'd they break now?
Well, it seems as though, Tony Cabral.
Yes, sir.
Al Jazeera, the famous Middle Eastern
television station
and news organization.
Yes.
Had just published an astonishing report on the after effects of the BP oil disaster, and it's not pretty.
Okay.
There are alarming numbers of deformities in the sea creatures, mutated shrimp, fish with sores and lesions, eyeless crabs, and more. It's unlike anything local fishermen have ever seen. Now, the question is, how bad is it? The effect that the oil spill and its reckless cleanup has left on sea life is frightening and damning and sad. They said sad.
Sad?
Yes. Okay. Here's a list of the deformities the Al Jazeera found in its report alone. You ready for this?
Go for it.
Let's knock these down one by one.
One by one.
All right.
Give it to me.
Shrimp with tumors on their heads.
Shrimps with tumors.
Shrimps with tumors on their heads.
Okay.
Tumors are not a good thing.
Tumors are never a good thing.
Nope. Shrimp with defects on their gills and shells missing around their gills and head.
Okay, so shell deformed shrimp.
Yes. Shrimps okay. without eyes.
Okay, eyeless blind shrimp.
Shrimp with babies still attached to them.
So
basically, they were going to give birth.
Kind of like shrimps, like they come on a Total Recall with like a shrimp with a shrimp on them?
Sort of, yeah. I guess you're going down the right path there.
Okay.
So basically, if I had Bubba Gump here, Bubba, he'd be like
shrimp, Bubba with, and Bubba Gump.
Shrimp with tumors, shrimp with defects on their gills, shrimps without eyes, shrimps with babies still attached to them shrimps.
Them shrimps?
That's with them shrimps.
Okay.
Eyeless fish. Fish with eye. Okay, wait. Now, here's the best one. Eyeless fish and fish without eye sockets. I think in both cases, they're eyeless fish. Let's just
well,
say eyeless
I
fish.
Think what it's saying is they find fish that have no eyes, but they also find fish that when they look at their skeletons, have no eye sockets.
Fish without covers on their gills. Fish with large pink masses hanging off their eyes and gills. Crates of blue crabs, all of which were lacking at least one claw. Crabs with holes in their shells. Crabs with shells that have no spikes or claws or misshapen claws. Crabs that are dying from within. Dying from within. I think we're all dying from within to an extent.
We're born dying.
The fishermen, scientists, and seafood processors who talked to Al Jazeera are all in unison. They've never seen something like this before.
Okay.
Some have worked in and around the Gulf for over 20 years, and most have seen thousands and thousands of fish. This is the first time they're seeing the mass mutation and destruction of seafood.
Okay.
So, what is the real cause here?
I'm really curious, actually. What is the real cause?
Dr. Jim Cowan of Louisiana State University believes the chemicals caused polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which the EPA terms as a group of semi-volatile organic compounds that are present in crude oil and that has spent time in the ocean.
Okay.
Basically, oil.
Oil.
Oil yeah. is hurting these fish.
Sure.
And we kind of already knew going into this whole situation with BP a few years ago, what was going to happen? I mean, this
well,
is not like...
yeah. Well, they're spilling lots of crude into the environment. It's not going to be a pretty thing, ever, yeah, regardless.
Mean, never. There was no win at the end of this situation for anybody. Nobody was going to win on this one. We all knew that walking into it. So I don't understand why it's such a huge news story that we have now mutated fish.
Well, I think what it is that all of the Gulf Coast states keep saying how, oh, we've been cleaned up, everything's fantastic, and BP saying that everything's good, we got all the oil cleaned up, and they're not admitting if there is anything that's been deformed or things that are being mutilated or things that are coming out mutated.
Do you think it's all for naught at this point, though? I mean, at this point, we kind of already all know that, so to just, like, throw it on the top of it, icing on the
cake. Well, I think that someone, whether it be Al Jazeera or an American news station, whatever else, should broadcast and report that these kind of deformities are being discovered. Now, I think that if an American news station went along and collaborated what Al Jazeera is saying, I'd believe it. However, if it's just Al Jazeera saying it, then it's, in my no offense, I'm not being at all culturally biased or racist or whatever else, but if the only reporting source is Al Jazeera, I have to be a little skeptical of what it is. If it's more than just Al Jazeera, like an American news station comes along and says, hey, this story is true. And I mean, mind you, if I have to do a little quick call in for 5 minutes next week and discuss this if a news story comes out in the next couple of days about this, I'm more than happy to. Because if it comes out that this story has been verified and is actually true, then sure. I mean, I think it's going to be incredibly destructive to the seafood industry, very destructive to the fishing and the economy down there in the Gulf Coast states, but at the same token, they pumped millions of gallons of crude into the oil. It's going to have some kind of destruction, and it's going to destroy the wildlife in some fashion. Like it's going to do something, you know.
So hey, I keep noticing you're over there on the cellphone in between us talking and stuff like that. Are you talking to a lady?
Maybe I'm you know,
are
checking
you talking
out your
to
news
a lady?
Story. Maybe I'm looking up your news story.
You're not focusing on the show? You talking
I am focusing on the show. We're discussing mutated sea creatures thanks to British Petroleum.
Would this person you're talking to or whoever you're talking to over there, because it doesn't seem, you're pretty intent. It must be a lady. Are you willing to live tweet a marriage proposal to her right now?
I will not. No.
Okay. Well,
I'll hit the edit button if I have to.
Well, last Friday.
I will hit the dump button.
Did you hear about the guy in Canada?
What guy in Canada?
Oh, last Friday, a Canadian man live tweeted his proposal of marriage to his girlfriend. The story went slightly viral, and as it unfolded, more than 700 response tweets came in bearing the hashtag MikeProposes over the course of Mike Durkinson's 12-hour tweet session, and has since exploded into a major internet meme in itself. In typical self-filleting fashion, the internet has clamored to read more stories about itself. Dirksen, who works in a nonprofit public relations office, said he met his girlfriend at a Pennsylvania native at a Mennonite World Conference held in Paraguay in 2009.
Okay.
Seems like a far way to go. Last Thursday, he announced on his Twitter page that a plan to take his girlfriend, whom he identified only as Jay, on 8 separate dates to 8 different locations, each of which bore a special significance to the couple. He also announced that he would be live tweeting the event.
Live tweeting their vacation?
These 8 dates.
Okay.
The next day, Dirksen took Jay on a picnic. He took her to a pond, and he took her out for coffee. At each location, he gave her a card containing a picture, a memory, and a wish for the future. Now, a little note here. Uh-huh. It's important to remember that this proposal happened on a Friday, 2 days before the premiere episode of Girls made us realize that the last thing we want is a thoughtful partner who does cute things for us. Okay.
Okay.
So true to his word, Dirksen shot a constant stream of tweets into the ether as the day unfolded.
Okay.
The internet, sensing constant something related to the internet was happening, loved it. The internet offered generic support. Here's one of the tweets. Wishing the best of luck to @MikeDirtzing today. Hashtag Mike proposes is such a cool idea.
Okay.
The internet even tried to tell Ellen about it. Hey, Ellen Show. A friend of mine is live tweeting a 12-hour lead up to his marriage proposal today, following along at #MikeProposes. The internet even made clever puns. Okay, this is a classic right here. Michelle Bailey says, @MikeDirtzing, yeah, thanks for having all of us engaged today. Congrats, Mike proposes. Or anyway, at least some of the internet loved it. Just got my roommate up to date on Mike proposes. We were underwhelmed by the ring. We are both too materialistic to say yes to that. So evidently, this guy pops the ring onto the internet, too, just to have people come back and kind of down talk it. So one person who was less enthusiastic during the process, the girlfriend in question, this was one of Mike Dirksen's first Mike proposes tweets. @MikeDirtzing, first challenge. Jay wants me to get off my phone and focus on our time together. So evidently, the first tweet in this long list of tweets leading to a marriage proposal is that he's over-tweeting.
Get off your phone and focus on vacation when he wants to live tweet his marriage proposal.
Now, Dirksen's fiancée doesn't use Twitter, Tony.
Okay.
She also purposely left her phone at home the day of the dates, meaning she probably spent a lot of time pretending to look around the room as Dirksen typed up clickety-clack-clack all over the place, all the details of his decidedly immodest proposal to an audience of mostly strangers.
Okay.
Perhaps the most uncomfortable aspect of the story is that Dirksen didn't confine his tweeting to simple #MikeProposes updates. He also took time to retweet other people's tweets and how this tweeting Twitter hashtag tweet buzzword internet hashtag retweet story was becoming internet famous. #internet famous.
Okay.
He replied to multiple tweets from a jewelry store concerning the purchase of the engagement rings and the wedding bands. He left a voicemail for the Winnipeg Sun newspaper detailing his proposal plans while on an alleged bathroom break.
Okay.
And he did this while on a date with his phoneless girlfriend. So you can imagine if you're the girl.
She's going, what is so important that you're on your phone the entire day for?
Now, in the end,
I've fallen victim to that myself before.
In the end, it all worked out. Jay had told him beforehand she would prefer, if ever he did propose, to donate to a charity rather than buy her a ring. Dirksen did both. He proposed to her in front of a bonfire, and she accepted. The internet was very happy.
Very happy. Well, he said
hashtag very happy. Congratulations to Mike and Jay. You have set the bar very high. #MikeProposes.
Hashtag.
So it's kind of hard to hate on a couple involved. You know, it's kind of hard.
No,
to hate
I mean
on them.
I think that what it is that people are looking for new ways to share their special moment and to kind of have fun and do their thing, and that's a new one to utilize your social network and your social media to publicize. I mean, like, you know, there was, you know, the people that go on some national show or go on a talk show, whatever, and they propose to their significant other. You know, there was a football player that did that to an actress that did that on Tonight Show.
Yeah. Now, have you ever seen? I always found it interesting when those go horribly awry. Like,
when people
would
stop and go.
I think it was last year at either a Nets basketball game or a Mavericks basketball game. The guy brings her down to center court, like at halftime, and like the place is loaded, and the video went nuts on the viral side because she goes running off the court, like shaking her head no, in front of like 20,000 people at a Mavericks game.
Running and shaking her head no.
Like, that's just, ouch. Could you just imagine if you were in that position?
That's pretty rough.
Like, I can't even imagine when my wife says no to sex half the time.
Well, that's because she has to have sex with you.
Yeah, well, that's
we're not going there. But no, it was Angie Harmon, who's on the TV show Brazilian Isles.
Right.
Her boyfriend, Jason Sehorn, proposed to her on the Tonight Show back in 2000. And, of course, things like that go over well. I mean, I remember there's a guy just the other day recently that was on the late Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
And or the late night show, whatever it is, with Jimmy Fallon. And this guy wanted to he was asking his girl to prom. They played some game and some joke or whatever else, and he brought her down. So he brought this guy down to play a game with him, and sure enough, he asked his, you know, girlfriend to prom. Everybody kind of wants one of those moments in time, whether you're proposing or doing something special like that, to be unforgettable and to be recognized as unforgettable by the entire world. Well,
I proposed at a stoplight on a rainy Valentine's Day night. I was going to do it on Art Hill overlooking the city. Unfortunately, that didn't work. It was freezing cold outside. It was like drizzle, freezing rain, and she didn't want to be out in it. So I just proposed at a stoplight.
But see, this is where you fail. That's what you call hashtag epic fail, Dr. Bland.
What?
I would have gone to Art Hill. I would have gotten out, even though she wanted to stay in the car, and said, just do me a favor and, you know, put the window down or open the door, and like got underneath in the mud and actually just there in the rain on your knees in the mud just proposed. I mean, like, I know you want to sit in the car, honey, so you sit right there, but I have something I have to do. You're at Art Hill still.
That's true. That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't just go.
I guess I could have.
Oh, well, honey, it's a red light. I don't get married.
I guess we could have made lemons out of lemonade, or lemonade out of lemons.
Well,
whatever.
Sure.
You know what I mean.
You know, but it's a matter, you know, the whole gist, regardless of how you do it, is that you do it in a way that is special to the both of you. If you find that special moment, a special time for the both of you, neither one of you will forget it.
You're such a romantic.
Thank you very much. Apparently, you felt the stoplight.
Yes. I felt that the stoplight was the most romantic spot.
A rejected date was a good time for you to propose to your now
wife.
Actually,
the date made me look like a chief boss because I walked up and I handed extra money on an hour and a half long wait at a restaurant on the hill. Mm-hmm. I walked up to the guy, I slipped him $20, and he got me in next. So it made me look like a freaking boss in front of all these people where I walked up late.
Well, you are kind of boss, aren't you? You are Dr. Mark Bland.
Speaking of bosses and speaking of failures, okay. Tony, you're a movie guy, and we've talked about this, obviously. Films.com, your movie show, blah, 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 blah. It's almost summer movie season, buddy.
It is almost summer movie season.
The time when Hollywood releases a flood of giant tentpole movies, each of them with massive blockbuster budgets.
Yes.
And with huge star-studded movies coming out almost every weekend, some of them are bound to fail, Tone.
Well, you know what the first summer blockbuster was, don't you, Mark Point?
It was not John Carter.
No, the first summer blockbuster. Do you know what it was?
Of all time?
What film created...
Jaws.
Yes, it created the concept that we know today as the summer blockbuster. Yes.
Okay. Jaws. Now, what movie do you think coming out is going to end up, blockbuster-wise, being the biggest flop of this year. Whereas the last time we were on, we talked, when you were on the show last time, we talked about the big movies coming out for the summer. And we discussed a bunch of them that were coming out.
Sure.
Now, this time around, we're going to discuss which one of these movies will become the biggest flop. And I have a nice little list here I'd like to just throw out there.
Oh, please. I'm curious. I want to hear what somebody else is saying is biggest flops, because I have a couple ideas of my own. But go ahead.
Now, let's see.
No, read from the bottom up. I want to hear.
No. Not this is not what they think are going to be the biggest flops.
Oh, okay.
We are just going to list off what we think out of these films is going to be the biggest flop.
Copy it.
We're going to choose it.
Rock and roll.
Brave.
Yeah.
The Avengers.
No, it's a rock star.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Rock star.
Prometheus.
Yeah.
Snow White and the Huntsman.
No, that'd be good.
Total Recall.
That'll suck.
Battleship.
Yeah.
Dark Shadows. Yeah. The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, Rockstar.
Or Men in Black 3. Now, I don't think The Dark Knight Rises is going to be a flop by any means. And I would probably be very far-fetched to believe The Avengers is going to fail. Or The Amazing Spider-Man. I'm assuming that those three movies...
See, those three movies coming out in one summer is going to make it a huge... Like,
and Men in Black 3.
And Men in Black 3. Those three movies are going to make this summer... huge for Hollywood. That's. I think this is going to be the first summer in a long time that we have such a big turnout at the theaters.
Okay. You know, I think people have gotten used to gas prices somewhat for whatever it's worth.
But we haven't had a collection of movies that are this good, that caliber, that are going to draw audiences out to the
theaters. That's not true. Just a few years ago, we had The Hulk. We had The Dark Knight. There was a bunch of movies that year. Like, huge movies.
Not like The Avengers, the last of the Batman
Harry
franchise.
Potter 8 last year.
Okay, but in one summer, we have not had the last Batman franchise movie with Chris Nolan as director. We have not had the culmination of the Marvel comic series in The Avengers. We have not had the reincarnation of Spider-Man with Garfield. We have three major things. Not to mention you have a huge blockbuster of a Milton Bradley board game coming to life in Battleship. Not to mention you have what is supposed to be the prequel to Alien in Prometheus. You have a second, more dark retelling of Snow White coming out. And not to mention, you've got some films. You got the sequel to G.I. Joe.
All right.
Which G.I. Joe was considered a terrible movie, but it still made $100 million box office.
Okay, so... with the movies that I listed off,
yes.
Where do you stand?
Oh, I think the Total Recall is going to flop miserably.
You really believe that? I saw the trailer. Great.
We watched it together.
Very entertaining.
Yes. But compared to The Avengers, The Amazing Spider-Man, and Dark Knight Rises, I think that you're going up against three of the biggest franchises in cinema today.
I really believe that on this list... the two movies that, in my opinion, are up for the biggest flop are probably Snow White and the Huntsman and Battleship. I think Battleship, to me, is just coming off like an overbloated, updated version of Pearl Harbor. And Pearl Harbor was technically a flop.
Okay, hold on.
Just like Troy. Troy was a flop for the U.S. Worldwide, it did great. But I don't care about worldwide. I'm talking about straight up John Carter flop.
I don't think Battleship will flop like that. I think the Battleship will still do amazingly well. And Snow White and the Huntsman, I think obviously all the marketing going out right now has been about Mirror Mirror, which is the Julia Roberts more child friendly, more happy go lucky version of Snow White and the Dwarves. Whereas Snow White and the Huntsman is the dark Charlize Theron version, which is like not meant to be for kids. This is the grown up version. Compared to the other blockbusters this summer, I think maybe you are right that possibly...
I've got people tweeting me as we speak. Total Recall. No one asked for it. No one wanted it. It came out of nowhere and will return there come August.
Well, and not to mention, that right there, my friend, I remember you and I together watched the trailer for Total Recall. I said it was very interesting. It was an interesting retelling of the story, but it had no business being done. It doesn't have any purpose to redo a movie that was out... what, like 25 years ago? No. It has no business. It's not going to succeed. Look what happened to Footloose. I hate to say it, but Footloose did not do good.
This guy is hitting me up at the General. He says, I think Tim Burton may have gone to that well one too many times with Dark Shadows, but Alice made a crap load of money, so we'll see.
Well, okay. To look at the Dark Shadows concept, this is more going back to the comedic Beetlejuice route of the Tim Burton. Not going to the hardcore just because I can version, but this is definitely going back to a much softer, funnier, you know, campy kind of thing with Dark Shadows. I think that you're going to find that Dark Shadows will do fairly well, especially with teenagers.
All right.
And especially with that younger audience. And I think the Brave will
succeed pick?
Because...
What's your pick?
Oh, I think Total Recall is going to be the biggest flop.
You think Total Recall is going to be... And I think it's going to probably be Battleship, in my opinion, okay. Honestly. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to have to go see those two movies together, and then we'll choose between those two movies which one we thought was the bigger
okay.
flop.
I'm down.
Honestly?
Sure.
But, of course, our money by going into the pockets of those movies is helping it not be a flop.
We can work on that.
We'll work on that. Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's about time for us to get out of here on the queue. Tony Cabral,
yes.
Go ahead, acefilms.com.
Yeah, acefilms.com. You can hit the link. You can go to my Kickstarter campaign for Ace Film Shorts, Last Rites, and One Lone Soldier. Please contribute to the fund. And like I said, if we hit $10,000 and you have told me that you put that in, listening to The Cue, I will put Mark Bland himself in the movie if we get over $10,000 just from Cue listeners.
All right, fair enough. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody who came on the show today. Kiwan, of course, Tony Cabral. Make sure you check out thecuenow.com. That's where you can find information about past episodes, future episodes, new episodes, old episodes, everything. Everything, and maybe even a screenshot from my debut movie that I'm going to be in called The Last Rites or Last Rite or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Just go help this guy out, ladies and gentlemen. Acefilms.com. Hey, thank you so much for listening to The Cue this week. I'm Mark Bland, and thank you to WestplexNewsTalk.com, where you can hear the show every single Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. This has been KYRO 1280. I'm Mark Bland, and God bless you all. This is The Cue. Cause the safe is not so safe, the piggy bank got legs and beating.